mystery. You still try to see why something good can hurt so bad. Caught on one way street, the taste of bittersweet. Love will survive somehow, some way.
From somewhere deep below the earth, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. To reach George from west of the Rockies, dial 800-618-8255. From east of the Rockies, dial 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George by dialing area code 818-501-4721. International callers may reach George by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5. Then dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
You know, in Los Angeles, our staff's been trying to get a hold of Michael Keaton. You know, he was in a great movie, White Noise, and we're trying to get him on Coast to Coast. And tonight, he is 7 minutes away from this cave here. 7 minutes away. He's in St. Louis for some event, and a friend of mine met him tonight, and apparently Michael can't take the St. Louis humidity. You got to get used to this humidity here, believe me, because it gets to be very thick. But he's around here somewhere. He's going to be here for a couple more days. Maybe I can grab him while he's here and get it all set up and beat the staff in Los Angeles. You talk about synchronicity. By the way, hello to all of you listening on your favorite radio stations, including WWL now in New Orleans. Hello to you, Streamlink members, the Imaginative Worlds, the Explorers. It's imaginativeworlds.com, by the way. The Fantastic Forum Pirates, Yahoo Chat Rooms, the National Radio Club, Sorcery IRC, couple more new chat rooms starting all the time. It just continues to grow. Appreciate you being a fan of Coast to Coast and supporting the program for so many years with Art and with me. And we will be back in a moment. Linda Moulton Howe, our very special guest this hour, and it's phone calls right after she tells us a little bit about what's going on with the weather. It'll change in just a minute. Well, Linda, tell us a little bit about this Greenland situation, what's going on there, how it could affect England, and then we go right to the calls, as promised.
Well, it amazes me that during the last decade on Coast to Coast and Dreamland, when I was reporting with Art and now with you, the story used to be that maybe in some distant future that there would be enough melting of the glaciers of the planet into the oceans that it could begin to affect the salinity of the water in some areas. And one of the big question marks was, could that, because if you neutralize salinity, it makes the water less dense and then it won't sink as well. And the idea was that the North Atlantic Drift, that some people in Europe call the Gulf Stream and the scientists call the Atlantic Thermohaline Circulation, this has been the key to why Great Britain and parts of the coast of Europe have always had a very temperate climate, at least in the last several centuries, because if you look on a map, the latitude that runs through England runs right to Labrador, and Labrador is cold in Arctic-like climate. But England can grow flowers and all this food and has always been very grateful that there was this current that comes from the equator, where it comes very warm, and it, like a big conveyor belt, comes up the Atlantic. And one of the big keys to this conveyor belt was the Greenland Sea and the Labrador Sea, and beating all computer model projections, and to the complete astonishment of this particular science team, was headed by Cambridge University physicist Peter Wadhams. He also is the head of the Cambridge Polar Ocean Physics Group, and for the last 4 to 5 years, he and his colleagues have been going to the Greenland Sea in the winter, and they have been doing tests on the ice in the water, and they found the most astonishing thing.
What's happening?
Up until 1997, there were these, they called them chimneys, big chimneys in the water or cylinders, that the cold water would sink in the Greenland Sea and the Labrador Sea and go down and be pulled into this conveyor belt back down to the equator, and around this water would go, bringing the warm water up to Great Britain. Well, in 1997, for the first time, ice was not forming in the Greenland Sea. That was the first measurable data that a big change was taking place. And when they started doing this research in the last 4 to 5 years, provoked by the fact that the sea, that normally the ice that was normally in the Greenland Sea was not there, and then what they find is they are reporting and have reported in a science journal that the downwelling of these great big chimneys of water used to be a dozen. Only 30 years ago, there used to be a dozen of these gigantic chimneys going down from the Greenland Sea. And for all intents and purposes, Professor Wadhams told me it has disappeared. They are stunned.
That is stunning.
There, no one expected that by 2005 that they would find this much change in one of the most important parts of this conveyor belt. Now, this is not the stopping of the North Atlantic drift, but this is one of the key, we'll call it, pieces of the machinery that has now changed so drastically. And all of the computer models based on the, we'll call it, the stopping or disappearing of these big downwelling chimneys for the very first time, all the computer models project that the temperature of Great Britain will, over the next, the rest of this century, so 95 years at least, the temperature will go down, go down, go down, while the rest of the world is warming up. This
That's
is
strange.
One of those paradoxes in the global warming discussion that has always been confusing to people. How can you have areas of glacier expansion and great cold if the planet is warming up even faster than the computer models have projected? We may
it's like a pocket or something, huh?
It's this issue of oceans, and what's the changes in the oceans are so much faster than they thought. We don't fully understand all the interactions, but we have this now, this big change, and this is next on the, we'll call it, the scientific data stream of how things are going to change. The computers project that the temperature in Great Britain will continue to go down. It may go down 6 or 8 degrees Fahrenheit, which may not sound like a lot to people, but that's huge if the rest of the planet is warming up. And what happens is that out of all of this, you will end up with much more violent weather. They are expecting that the violence of hurricanes in the Atlantic will be greater because there will be more moisture from increasingly warm water lower, more toward the south, but there would be a huge disparity in temperatures as you go up the North Atlantic and you get up to England. And when you have colder temperatures and warm temperatures, you always end up with more violent mixes. And then, of course, if this is happening already, what will the consequences be on the whole socioeconomic climate? And as part of all of this, we now know there's been another report just last week out of China. They've been doing measurements on the glaciers in the Himalayas. They've been doing specific measurements on glacier melt on Mount Everest, and they're reporting that it's faster than anything that anybody had expected, and this could affect water supplies all over the place.
We're going to see dramatic changes, Linda. Dramatic changes,
right.
I think, all over the place. Ready for some calls?
Sure.
Wildcard line, let's get us started. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, I have a question.
Yeah.
George, love this show, by the way.
Thank you.
It's for Linda. I was looking at your website and noticed that you say that the birds know to take just the liver. Could it be an adaptation to the evolution of this toad?
Well, one of the first things is that there isn't a single eyewitness who has seen a crow doing this. It has been a hypothesis that I was talking about in the first half hour. There is the man that I interviewed who, with his own eyes at night, watched one of these toads explode to about four times its size and explode. And that's another interesting question. Why would this be happening at night? Same thing in Denmark. The entire phenomena was taking place between 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning in Denmark. There are so many pieces of this puzzle that just don't add up with the quote-unquote hypothesis of the crows suddenly plucking the livers out of a thousand cane toads in Germany and hundreds in Denmark. Something is, we still don't know, I don't think, what the answer is.
It just sounds like some kind of gas or something that somehow they're obtaining. I don't know. This is one bizarre story.
Well, I got a very interesting email during the break from a woman who said, there was an issue of exploding shrimp in the southeast, and I'm reading this not having any factual, I don't personally have any investigative knowledge, but I thought this was very interesting. When the exploding shrimp were tested for levels of phosphorus, extreme levels were found, but I don't know why, I'm just reading from this email. It was concluded that when the shrimp, having such high levels of phosphorus, were pulled up from the water and the phosphorus mixed with the oxygen, the result was exploding shrimp. Now, I'm going to try to find out, George, what I can about this.
Okay.
But what this is heading toward is that there may be some bizarre chemical combination, whether purposefully designed by somebody trying to kill cane toads or something else, you know, an environmental spill, that might be in this. But again, when they did the laboratory tests on the tissues and the water, everything came up negative in terms of finding an assault in the environment or in the tissue. That's why this is a big mystery.
What about some terrorist test, Linda? Who can rule that out?
Well, the Northern Australian government definitely hates the cane toads enough and have got up $1 million that they want to put into R&D to eliminate them from Australia. So if Australia, if they are focused on it, who knows what somebody might have tried to do in these two places in Europe to test something.
First time caller line, you're up with Linda Moulton Howe on Coast to Coast AM. Hi there.
Hello. Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of goes along the same line as the email. You had mentioned that they had tested biological, but had they actually tested any chemical agents in the water and the frogs?
Yeah, chemicals. Okay. Toxins, yes, they did.
Now, another thing I'd like to point out, too, is down in Africa, there were some villages that were wiped out not too long ago, and they found out that it was due to a temperature inversion in the lake that had held toxic gases down in the bottom of the lake, and that temperature inversion shifted, and the gas bubbled to the top. Maybe the same thing is going on in these ponds, because if you look at the time, it'd be about the same time that these bodies of water would be warming up.
Well, I'm familiar with what happened in Africa. It is a very different phenomena. In Denmark and in Hamburg, you're talking about a specific isolation of only the cane toad. There's all kinds of other life and water life in the Alten Lake and in that area in Denmark. The only thing affected were the cane toads exploding.
Okay, but the cane toads also have some very specific chemicals within them to make the poisons and the like, and maybe it is a specific chemical that's reacting with another chemical that's specific to the cane toad.
And then what everybody has to find out is, why did this occur only for 5 days in Hamburg and 2 days in Denmark?
Because that's as long as it took for the temperature inversion to be able to purge the chemicals that were in the bottom of the lakes.
Well, it's a very interesting idea. Right now, I don't have any data that would suggest that they have found anything in the water that would point in any kind of chemical or toxin direction, but this story isn't over, and I will certainly keep trying to find out what's going on.
Thanks for your call. West of the Rockies, your turn. You're up on Coast to Coast. Hello.
Yes, this is Joel from Downey Transport in Coca-Cola. I have a question for Linda Howell.
Sure thing, Joel.
Yeah, you know, with these exploding frogs, if they're testing them, you know, like with nanotechnology or whatever, what is the possibility that they couldn't get humans to explode as well?
Well, good now point. We're into that world of chemistries and biologies and whatever is happening with the cane toad. If it is some outside technology, it wouldn't have been focused on humans. Could something like that happen to humans? I don't know. Now we're in the world of science fiction, and I just really wouldn't have an answer.
Wow. Well, thanks very much.
Okay, appreciate your phone call. I'm going to do a little quick, while you're still with us this hour, Linda, a fast blast question from people. Mm-hmm. Just because I want to read their comments. Just let's see what you think might be happening to these frogs, these toads, if you want to fast blast me, and I'll share them with Linda. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to the program. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. And where might you be calling from, sir?
Well, I'm calling you from Dana Point, California. I'm out under the moon here and looking at Venus.
Well, enjoy.
Well, thank you. I'm a longtime listener. If you got a pencil, my favorite show of all time was 9/11/97. And you ought to go back in the archives and listen to that, because that was an officer who supposedly escaped from an infirmary in Area 51, and he got on a telephone and was talking to Art, and it was a wild show. They knocked him off the air. And
yeah, he just disappeared all of a sudden.
Well, they actually attacked him while he was on the phone, and it was just a landmark show, 9/11/97.
Yep, we have.
And I hope your family's doing well.
Thank you, sir.
I'd like to say hello to Linda.
Hello.
Linda, this is Bill. Thank you for getting that poem off. I saw you in Costa Mesa last month when you were speaking at MUFON.
Okay.
I gave you an envelope, and you said you'd mail it off for me. But,
oh, yes. Thank you.
Yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Okay. Go ahead.
Do you have a question about anything I've talked about?
Yes, the frogs.
Okay.
Back in 1988, in Moira Timms' book, Beyond Prediction and Prophecy, we had that supernova blue star that went off that the Hopis predicted, and it was the first time we saw a blue star that supernovaed, and it sent out what she called mutation neutrinos. And that was in relation with the Great Concordance or Convergence or the cosmic kickoff of 88. And she said that we'd start to see mutations in all kinds of animals, and there certainly has been with the white buffalo and other things. And I was wondering if there was an array of cosmic vibrations or subatomic particles on those particular dates that may have triggered a DNA reaction or a mitochondria reaction within the cells of the frogs.
I don't know how any of us would know.
There's no way to check statistics to see what the solar winds were doing or the electromagnetic spectrum at that time?
I just don't even know anybody who would be studying such a link with
some
frogs
of the,
in
some
Hamburg
of the fast blasts.
Denmark.
Linda, some people are saying somebody is dumping Alka-Seltzer and these toads are eating
yeah,
that stuff.
I received an email about that too, but it made me laugh more than think it was serious. But, you know, I'm definitely going to try to keep my mind open to this issue of some kind of chemistry that is very odd, and I'll keep following up.
somebody, let's say there could be some kind of bacteria, which of course is being investigated. Yeast could do that as well. Again, phosphorus continues to come from these fast blasts. It's
right.
A bizarre, bizarre story. Someone's doing some kind of heinous experiment on them before they do it on people. Unbelievable. Stay with us, Linda. We'll wrap up with the rest of the calls when we come right back with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. If you need to email me, that's simple, george@coasttocoastam.com.
Sign up now for Streamlink, now with podcasting. Get it today at coasttocoastam.com. Somewhere deep below the earth, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. To reach George from west of the Rockies, dial 800-618-8255. From east of the Rockies, dial 800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach George by dialing area code 818-501-4721. International callers may reach George by dialing your in-country Sprint access number and pressing option 5. Then dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
I'm going to take the rest of your phone calls this half hour with Linda Moulton Howe. Then at the top of the hour, we'll start our Friday into Saturday morning open lines for you right here on Coast to Coast. Dan writes us, by the way, this may be the reason for the toads. Quite frankly, it may be one of the best reasons for it. He says, George, sounds to me like these exploding toads might be one of Dr. Morgus's experiments gone wrong. Anyone check? You might be right on that one, indeed. Hey, by the way, thank you, those of you continuing to sponsor children with Children International. We are ahead of the goal. We're pacing out well. I need a big push of about 20 of you tonight if you can do it. Go to the coasttocoastam.com website. On the left-hand side of the screen, you'll see a yellow flashing banner. You click that. That takes you right to their website, and you can sponsor a child. If you can afford $18 a month, go for it. Here's also a toll-free phone number for those of you who do not have a computer, 1-800-869-9863. That's 1-800-869-9863. And I've got to tell you, the organization is thrilled to death with those of you who listen to Coast AM and have been sponsoring children. They said it's been one of the greatest outputs of affection they have ever seen on a radio campaign. So thank you again. 1-800-869-9863 or that yellow flashing banner on the coasttocoastam.com website. Linda, here's a sick story, and back to the Alka-Seltzer from John in Massachusetts. He said, George, back in the 70s, my high school friends blew up a seagull by feeding it Alka-Seltzer. We watched it get so bloated, it was rejected by the flock, chased away, it took flight, and blew up about 20 feet in the air. Now, that's an incredible story.
Good heavens. But what would it take on a lake for to basically get something into 1,000 cane toads without having an impact on all the other life?
That's true. Plus, if you put that much Alka-Seltzer in a lake, that thing would be foaming over, wouldn't it?
Well, the thing about this is all of this event is isolated to the toads only, but it's a lake with a lot of other life. And there's been no other anomaly reported, and that's why this is so cane toad specific for reasons that are just not clear, because you would think other things would have been affected if it was something in the water in general.
Aren't frogs and toads, though, the early warning system for things? They generally, because of their skin, they can absorb environmental conditions faster than human beings can. So we see these, you know, six-legged frogs,
right,
and these two-headed toads and things like that. And maybe this is an indicator of some major environmental disaster.
Well, I'm going to take these various chemistry hypotheses back to Dr. Blaustein next week. And if there's anything that is worth reporting, I'll let you know.
Okay.
In the meantime, during the break, a very interesting email came to me with a question. This is relating to the very interesting crop formation west of Phoenix. It says, was the location of the recent formation near Phoenix anywhere near where the lights in the sky were seen, I believe, last week? Are you familiar with whether or not there was some unidentified aerial object in Phoenix last week?
I'm not sure if it was last week, Linda, but I do know that there were some reports several weeks ago, so it's very close.
Well, if any Coast listener in the Phoenix area should know of anything that's happened in the last few days in Phoenix that might be worth investigating, please email me at earthfiles@earthfiles.com. I would sure like to see, just like in Cyprus, there, at least the person who discovered this large down crop there was linking it to the multiple witness sighting that stopped cars on a road of light, a very strange light in the sky. We don't know if there's any definite link, but it would sure be nice to investigate if there has been something there.
Back to the phones we go. We'll pick it up by going to our wild card line. Welcome to the show. Hello.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I have a question for Linda.
Sure.
And I know you were talking about the oceans warming, and I was wondering if you had any thoughts on what the effects of the warming oceans might be on all the frozen methane that's there out by Bermuda.
Okay. The temperatures in the ocean waters, they work like a conveyor belt. So there is warm water in the equator that gets brought up the Atlantic, if you think along the coast up to England, and it's not static. It's a very dynamic system. The possibility of these inversions of gas that have been talked about off of the coast, like what happened in Africa, it's a very complicated story. It deals not just with temperature. It really is complicated. And my own feeling about this is that it isn't something that would be nearly as worrisome as the fact that we are going to be facing sea level rise and a lot of other things that are going to force people to move from the coasts where the largest population in the planet is, and over this century, what happens to all these people. I think that's what we need to be concerned about more.
Okay. Thank you, because, you know, there's a lot of it out there, and I was thinking, you know, if it starts melting or something, that might cause a real problem. But I can see your point about the rising water.
Yeah, that is going to be one of the bigger problems.
Okay, thank you.
And thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Thanks for being on the program. Next up, let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George. This is Brooke. I'm calling from Newport, Rhode Island,
hey,
home of
good
the only Knight Templar Tower in America.
You are right.
I'm calling regarding your frog story and also the bee story. The frog story, I believe I heard earlier this week that the reason the frogs were bursting was because they were eating a certain berry that was very toxic to their system.
Well, if you've read that someplace, sir, I sure would appreciate your sending me something, because I've stayed in touch with people in Germany, and so far there hasn't been an answer, at least as of today. So if you have something, I'd sure like to see it.
Incidentally, Linda, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you, sir.
Did you hear about the bee story? This
yes.
was about a month ago, and it was reported that the bees in California have been infected by a mite from Mexico, and that 70% of the bees in California have died. And this is a really crucial story or a crucial event, because bees pollinate flowers and plants and vegetables, and this can lead to problems with the ecosystem and with the growing of food.
Yes, I have it on my table of developing stories to do, because I have talked with people in both botany and in insect work in the past about it's been a growing, evolving problem, the decimation of the bee population in, I started to say North America, but more in the United States, for a variety of reasons, and this does affect the food chain. And if we end up with disease in bees that kill them at the level at which California and some other places have been experiencing this, then we are going to be facing some challenge to artificially get pollinators, whether we have to buy them, import them, we are going to have to pollinate some way. So this is a big story.
Well, have you noticed that the price of the same size jar of honey is now $13 compared to like $6 from a year ago?
Yeah, no, you're right. Also, blueberries, for example, I don't know why, but even they're all huge. Now, what does that have to do with anything? I think it all has to do with the pollination of everything that's going on.
And that we're going to need some kind of outside help at the rate that our bee population is being decimated. And where is that going to occur? I don't know. But that's part of what I'm trying to deal with in this story, is what do we do when our bee population is so affected and we are going to have to get outside help from someplace?
All right, next up, let's go west of the Rockies. Hi there, you're on Coast to Coast.
Hey, hi, George, Linda.
Hi.
First time caller, first time I tried to call and I got through. How's that for luck?
Good.
Yeah, we are importing bees from Europe now and trying to cross-train them, as something I read in Discover magazine not too long ago. And what a heck of a problem, I tell you, with the bees. So what I actually called about was the frogs. And a source that I don't remember, a journal, had pointed out that it was a banner year for this particular frog's favorite food. And so, you know, like my little dog, if you leave food down, he eats it until he can't move anymore. And then upon the putrefaction of these critters, you know, they just essentially exploded from within. So according to this article, it wasn't so far off as feeding it Alka-Seltzer, however the Alka-Seltzer was its favorite food supply.
Well, if you or any listener has a specific article from some magazine or whatever, I sure would appreciate it if you could email either the citation to me or a copy to earthfiles@earthfiles.com. I'd really like to follow up.
Phoenix Lights, by the way, not a couple days ago, closer to about 8 days ago,
okay.
That there were some lights in that area. We had a little picture up on the website.
And we're not sure when these long three parallel lines were put down, and the fact that that satellite image exists and maybe three different ones makes this even more interesting. So hopefully we'll keep hearing from people about what did happen in the sky with lights recently.
First time caller line, you're on with Linda on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, is this me?
Yes, sure is, sir.
Oh, well, nice to talk to you, Linda and George.
Sure thing.
Yeah, I had an answer for you about the lights. Art show this weekend did feature a spot about a gentleman recording the lights that happened 8 days ago, and it's on the Coast to Coast front page website that it actually shows a picture of it, and it would give a date and might help Linda.
Over Phoenix.
Yeah.
I think it was May 12th.
Yeah, it was recently. Yeah. And the other thing is about the frogs is also within the past month or so, it was recorded that 2.2 billion light years away, a star burst and shot out a massive amount of gamma rays toward the Earth, and it was recorded. And
yes.
Like it was said, frogs being such an indicator species, this particular frog and its particular biology with this poison, it might have been a reactor of some kind from these gamma rays that finally reached Earth.
Why wouldn't that have affected all of the cane toads and frogs around the world?
Oh, well, I...
Good point.
Good point. Very good point there. But, yeah, I live close to Mount Hood out here, and I just wanted to let you know that there's always a constant low-active rumbling underneath Mount Hood, volcanic activity. And when it gets above 3.0 on the Richter scale, that's when they... report it, but ever since Mount St. Helens, they've put meters up there, and there's constant low-level activity under Mount Hood.
That's why there really is some serious concern about whether the Juan de Fuca fault, whether there could be seismic activity there, and if there was, then we would have the possibility of a tsunami going out in the Pacific, like what happened in Indonesia. And I think that geologists actually have some serious concern about whether or not that whole Juan de Fuca fault line that ties into the mountains in the northwest and all the way over to Yellowstone, in a way, if it could be at that time in the cycle of 800,000 some years, Yellowstone, the last time it blew, we're kind of, in a way, overdue. And not that there's any alarm. I think USGS does a terrific job on keeping these monitors, and they do look for patterns of anything that is above 5 on the Richter scale repeated. And for the most part, I know because I've seen a lot of their statistics and have talked with a lot of their scientists, most of the time the low rumbling and the action in Yellowstone and otherwise stays outside of what they consider to be that alarm level. And as one scientist said to me, we are in an active volcanic area, and it's not going to go away. It's just a question, will it erupt more mildly, or will there be another big eruption? And that's the part nobody can predict.
Let's go to our final caller, you from east of the Rockies. Hi there.
Hello, George. This is Peter from Dearborn Heights.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. How are you doing, Linda?
Hi.
I read your book, and I'm very interested in getting in contact with you. But the question I want to ask, I'm telling you about, you know, Dr. Schultz was on with George, and he mentioned that the spring water fungus was in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Could that have affected the frogs, causing the swelling?
Well, they did do tests, according to the veterinarian I talked to and to Mr. Smolnik with the Humane or the Protection Group. They tested for fungus, bacteria, viruses, pesticides, chemicals, microorganisms, and they came up negative across the board.
Well, you know, I studied the cycle of spring water fungus, and it starts as a plant, and it lives in animals, and it's actually spread to plants. It's actually got into bananas, and this it's spreading throughout the whole world.
Well, I don't know about that, but remember again,
yes,
that whatever happened, it only happened April 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th.
Right.
The 7th, those are five, basically the nights were when they were exploding, but 5 days and nights, had a very sharp beginning and end in Hamburg, and then 3 weeks later, for only 2 days, on April 25th and 26th, this reoccurred 200 miles northwest in Denmark. And this is part of what baffles people in what would be the field of zoology. If there was something that was in the water or the environment or the food, there should not be such a sharp beginning and a sharp ending in 5 days and 2 days.
And Linda, don't forget last year, that story we were looking at about all those dead squirrels.
It's
remember
true.
That one?
Yeah. Yes, and that was, that truly was baffling and never had a successful answer either.
No, I know it. There's just a lot of strange things going on in this planet right now. So what are you doing these days? What's up?
Well, let's see. I am working on a series of, everything from a new development in Brazil I'm going to be reporting about in Earth Files, having to do with mysterious lights there and interactions with people that will be quite fascinating. I'll be posting that at Earth Files in the next week or two. And I am trying to do more on this problem with the bees. I think that any of these areas where we're seeing major impacts to what we need for everything to continue to function normally, that it's like dominoes falling, George. We don't fully understand what all the consequences are going to be, and we keep stumbling into problem after problem. And what's happened to the bees, I think, is another big story. I'm going to do more on that.
Okay. Follow up with us, Linda. Thanks. Have a great weekend, okay?
Thank you.
Linda Moulton Howe. When I come right back, we are going to have a couple hours for you of open lines, including a hotline I'm going to open up for those of you who are afraid of the dark. I'll tell you about that and give you that number when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Get ready.
Podcasting, the new way to get Coast to Coast AM to your computer. Available to all StreamLink subscribers at coasttocoastam.com.